Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
Rate us nicely, you 5 stars. Unlike the Big 12, we get a lot of them.
Pete Thamel.
If they had camouflage yoga mats, I would think about it.
They probably do.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Noted epidemiologist Deb O'Sweeney and Dan Wetzel in league in lockstep.
And here's Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. July 4th week coming up. Even here amidst the pandemic, generally kind of one of the better weeks of the summer. So hopefully whatever scaled version you have of your summer going, maybe it's as good as ever and you're hanging out at the Lake of the Ozarks getting trashed at the dirty gator or whatever they're calling it.
Yeah.
And somehow avoiding the Rona. Or maybe you're locked inside and your city has now had to ban bars again. I mean, it's really sad when the bars close. I think there's I think there's other metrics that people get upset about. Me.
That hits home.
When right? the taps are shut down,
yeah.
a little tear runs down my cheek. I feel bad. Even though, yeah, I wasn't going to go to a bar in Miami or wherever these things are.
Austin.
Yeah, anywhere. Yeah.
Just was this more sad when they close or reclose? Because the reclose is like the real defeat.
Yeah.
It's like you've kind of failed. Our leadership sucked. So now we have to, like, we gave this back to you. And now we have to take it away again.
Yeah. And, you know, as we all have our favorite bars around the country, we get to travel. We're lucky to travel in this job or we once did. You know, we all had there's always those bar. You always stay at this hotel. There's this bar around the corner or something. Every bar's got its regulars. So I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what every bar's got its own little culture. And I know that even though I am unlikely to attend this bar that is now closed, I know there are people whose lives have been adversely affected. But I'm not sure coronavirus and bars work really well. Sadly.
Natural conflict there.
Just. Yeah, you know. I also think it is, in terms of the college football, a reminder that once these campuses open up, everyone is getting coronavirus. And everyone on these football teams and all the other athletes are going to get it. I just don't know. I think it would be you got to thread the needle. Maybe 5% of college students this year will not get it. I mean, am I ridiculous to think pretty much how are you avoiding this? Like there's a couple library science majors that are just going to hide out in their room or something. But I don't I don't know.
I couldn't put an estimate on it, but I would say that it's going to be very difficult. Just even if you're not going to the campus bars or not going to the house parties and everything, you're still living in a dorm and or an apartment with a bunch of other people
who went to the bar.
Yeah, right. And everybody's coming and going from somewhere, and it's going to be tough. I know that. I certainly one school I know of in particular, man, they are going to be like so vigilant on masks and social distancing and stuff like that. It's not even going to be you're going back to school, but you're almost going into like a regulated penal system as far as what you can't do or where you can go and that sort of thing. We'll see how it works out. I don't know.
That's the theory. So you're going to get all the theory. All the kids, they're just going to social distance. There'll be nobody getting within 6 feet of each other on a Friday night in a college town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It all sounds good.
We hate bringing up the possible negatives. It just is what it is. I don't know how. Yeah. I think, you know, I know it doesn't make big news, but like just this weekend in Detroit, they shut down 2 different auto factories.
Really?
Because of a breakout, you know, and it's like they'll clean it and figure, but it's like start, stop. And, you know, these are places that employ 7,000, 10,000 people, you know, running 24 hours a day or at least 2 shifts and, you know, big operations with huge profit motives behind them. And it's like, hey, we got to shut down and we got to do this. Come. It's just such a difficult virus to contain. This is where we're at. Since our last podcast, Clemson got up to 37. They took the lead in the coronavirus sweepstakes.
Clemson is this the might new be number one cup? On the field yes. and in the virus.
Fulmer Cup.
Remember the Fulmer Cup from Every Day Should Be Saturday? It's like the new. Yeah,
this is the Fauci Cup.
For you. The Fauci Cup. There we go.
The Fauci Cup. Easy. I like it.
Yeah, that's good. Very good.
The Fulmer Cup, for those who didn't know, was Every Day Should Be Saturday. The old blog used to keep track of off-field arrests during the off-season and would tally it up by who got the most arrests for their school. It's named the Fulmer Cup. I have no, just a coincidence, I guess, right?
Yeah,
no,
sure.
Certainly.
Yeah, it didn't have anything.
Nobody was doing their civic duty, man, buck in Knoxville back then.
I bet Sully's actually had parties to celebrate Fulmer Cup victories when the offseason ends. Camp started. We got the cup this year, guys.
No celebrating this past year in Knoxville. Bryant took home the title. Georgia Southern finished second. Nebraska third is the top Power Five school. The closest thing Tennessee finished in would be the LST Jones the Third Award for individual achievement, where a former Tennessee player finished second.
What crime spree took place at Bryant College, or do I even want to know?
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm going to have to dig into it.
All right. I admit I do host a college, co-host a college podcast, that I was not aware of the situation at Bryant College football. I
would have to say Bryant kind of escaped all of us.
I acknowledge my lack of research on that one, but
it's right under my nose too.
Yeah. What's going on, Pete?
Yeah. I'm clearly slacking. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. Well, anyway, individual achievement award, the Fauci Cup is going to Clemson right now. They are following my early on plan of just getting the whole team infected and getting herd immunity, which you guys scoffed at, but great strategic minds like mine and Dabo Sweeney.
Yeah. Did you see the Toledo Blade column by Dave Briggs, who's a very good columnist?
He's
over the weekend about basically talking to several health experts about that idea. And one of them's answer to the Wetzel plan, although it was not termed the Wetzel plan to him, I don't believe, of getting everybody the virus early, was F you. Print it. He said, print this, F you. So you do not have company in the health field, Dan, I hate to tell you.
Well, you know, I think that was an excellent piece by Dave Briggs, and I encourage anyone to read it, ToledoBlade.com. It really was good. He went through all the strategies and also showed how just, like, I don't know. Toledo had a plan, but it's, you know, good luck. I get his FU, but, you know, trailblazers, pioneers, are those of us that challenge us. We're often mocked, shouted down in hatred, accused of ignorance.
Yeah.
Okay.
All great work is done in defiance of management.
Yeah. Put a man on that moon and someone said F you. Someone told the Wright brothers said, I'm going to get up in a little plane. I'm going to fly over there. And some jerk in Toledo said F you. So they went to Dayton and did it or something, right? I don't know. Where'd they fly that thing?
They had to go to Kitty Hawk, Kitty North Hawk. Carolina. They were from Dayton.
Yeah.
Went to, yeah.
So, yep. You know, cannot be bothered. The lion cannot be bothered by the opinion of his sheep.
Oh, there we go. Breaking up.
Ian Dabo.
It was an immune disease, Dr. Dan.
Yeah. Dr. Dabo.
Yeah.
Noted epidemiologist Dabo Sweeney and Dan Wetzel.
And Coach O.
In lockstep.
Another known academically minded guy. Coach O is involved in this. I really think I'm on the side of the big thinkers. The big brains.
A prophet unrecognized in his own land. That's what we're looking at here.
F you, Toledo Blade. One of the best names for a newspaper, too. I always love that.
It's awesome.
Kind of vicious. It's like, hey, we're coming at you.
Second best in Ohio to the Vindicator.
Youngstown Vindicator.
Where's the Vindicator?
Youngstown.
Although it is falling on some hard times. I've read a couple articles about it. But yeah, pure namesake, the Vindicator is...
As long as we are veering this far off field, there is a Toledo Blade Boulevard exit near Tampa off of I-75. Like, somebody explain that to me.
Wait,
Toledo
what?
Blade Boulevard in Florida. I'm Googling now.
All right. First off, we're now deep in research we should have done before the show if we did any show prep. Do we know what happened at Bryant College yet?
From the looks of the individual awards, it looks like Bryant College had a few players with some assault charges in the same situation, so they racked up some points.
Like a fight?
And four more Bryant students charged an on-campus assault.
So it was like a fist fight?
Yeah, it looks like a fist fight at a party or something.
I just can't believe that there was anyone out there that would step to the Bryant football team in a fight. I mean, you know, that's the Bryant football team. You don't fight them. They just whooped up on, Colby College last weekend.
You know, the AD at Bryant was like 10 years ago.
Jim O'Brien. Wasn't Jim O'Brien coaching there?
No. No, he was at Emerson. Oh. The AD was Danny Gavitt.
Danny Gavitt?
Really?
Yeah. He left the Big East, went there, started his administration career, and then bounced around a few other places. So I actually know who Bryant's football coach is, too. He used to be the coach at Columbus High School in Miami, Chris Merritt. So I could Bryant you all day if you really wanted me to.
Very good school.
Yeah, excellent. Business school. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably arguing over entrepreneurial plans. And fist fight broke out.
So now, here's the deal on Toledo Blade Boulevard, if you want it.
All right. Do what? Do we?
I know you do. There was a guy that used to work at the paper who went down to Florida and was working as a real estate developer or whatever, and supposedly sold like a bunch of lots and everything. And apparently somewhere along the way, he got the chance to name a road, and he named it Toledo Blade Boulevard. So there you have it. I wish it was a better story than that.
That kind of was...
Sorry, that's all I got.
That story.
If we have any new listeners, we're pretty much begging them to never listen again to our podcast. Yeah,
that was a very Toledo-esque story.
It is. Okay, how did we get there?
That story exists. So, big news this weekend: Mississippi is changing its flag. Crazy things are happening very quickly, of course, in America. But Kylan Hill kind of started this or added a spark, and then he got all the coaches. And once again, I think this is the power of it's going to hurt recruiting.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, really, it's the rivals rankings have toppled a flag. There were people in Mississippi who were like, we had 155 years. My ancestors' heritage, not hate. It's going to hurt recruiting. Take it down.
That's it.
They got to do this stuff. They want stuff going down. Tell them it's going to hurt recruiting.
All the great black football talent in that state all leaves, then Mississippi and Mississippi State are hurting even more. So, yeah, there you go.
That 100%.
I really do think the NCAA, like, taking away millions of dollars in those regionals was a big factor here or threatening. First of all, props to the SEC and Greg Sankey. They started the ball rolling here. The NCAA sort of, like, waddled its way in with that. But those were punitive things. SEC didn't really have anything punitive to hold over them. The NCAA did, and I think that was a huge factor. And then I just think Kylan Hill embarrassed everybody, right? Like, it's going to take a 21-year-old to do this. So good for him. I mean, just we can go through the roll call again, but if you just think about in the last, what, month, what player-empowered movements and changes they've made, you know, from coast to coast in college football, it's just been significant, and it's kind of daunting to, like, digest it all, considering these are, like, you know, like the honors college at Clemson was named that for, you know, X number of decades, and that flag flew. I mean, that flag's been controversial. They tried to remove it in 2001. Like, so, you know, it's and then they're like the feckless governor there came up with a, we'll do two flags. Duh, duh, duh. Like, yeah, what a great idea. What a good solution. That's
separate,
really gonna,
but equal. Right? Yeah. We're doing separate but equal flags now.
There you go.
Oh, God. So good for Kylan Hill. Like, whatever he does, if he goes and becomes a 10-time all pro and wins Super Bowls or whatever, he will be remembered for this week longer than anything he accomplishes on the field. And he's a great player. He'll accomplish plenty on the field.
Yeah,
good player. That's an amazing switch. Like you said,
it is
amazing switch. So, it was interesting this weekend. Mike Krzyzewski came out with it's really just a monologue where he just talked about how Black Lives Matter. That I thought was interesting. I think Alabama football had a powerful thing. I think we're seeing more and more kind of statements. And again, I think my opinion on those guys, they don't owe it to stand up and speak out. But I just wished more of Krzyzewski. I think Saban, those guys were people I mentioned, like, you know, what do you think? You're supposed to be a leader. We hear all about leadership. You sell books about leadership. You give speeches about leadership. Be a leader. Taking a little bit, but seems like they're leading on it in ways that I think can be, I don't know. I was interested. I wanted to hear what Coach K thought. I thought it was an interesting thing. What do you think? How do you put it? Because he's obviously very good at articulating a message, and I thought he did. He went back to his West Point days and a prayer from the cadet prayer and different things. I thought was pretty interesting. What'd you think of that one, Pat?
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good, and it showcased his gifts, okay, as a communicator, a forceful communicator when he chooses to use it. And there are times, quite frankly, I've wondered where Mike Krzyzewski was on a lot of issues, and he chose to step forward here. And yeah, you can, you know, if you're keeping score, okay, maybe John Calipari said something a week before, or somebody else said something 2 weeks before, you know, whatever. That's fine. I don't care about order or any of that. All I know is when he did come forward and put out that statement, it was really good. It was powerful. It was effective because it was just him, as you said, talking into a camera, talking to us, talking to each of us. And I think he's someone we needed to hear from on this. He's by far the most accomplished coach in college basketball. He has been around forever. He is a smart, smart man. And this was a great opportunity, I thought, and he took it. So I really liked it. I thought it was good. And if there's more coaches that want to step up and do it too, more power to you. Let's hear from you.
Yeah, I really thought it was it was powerful. It was thoughtful. It was certainly well executed. And I mean, the message was crystal clear. There was nothing muddled. Like, you know, the early wave of coach statements addressing racial unrest and obviously social justice issues were a lot of like quotes and hopes and emojis. And now it certainly took Mike Krzyzewski a while to do this, but he certainly did it best. And it certainly traveled as much as any of these videos. Alabama football did another one this weekend that got a lot of traction too. Maybe that was late last week. But good for Coach Kent. Quite frankly, I've over the years tried to get Coach K to speak out on issues. Now, nothing near the gravity and magnitude of this, but just your nickel dime NCAA issues and the push pull of as things happen in college football. And he is majority of the time just kind of said no thanks. Like he's, there was a little like, I don't want to upset the apple cart. Republicans buy sneakers too. I'm just going to stay here up on my perch and not ruffle feathers. Even though he may have had strong feelings about certain things. So good for him for stepping up at a time where, the college basketball world need to hear his voice.
So it's interesting. He's wearing his USA basketball kind of jacket. Had the flag right on it. Olympics, all that. What's interesting. I think with Coach K, look, we do not believe in hero worship here, so we're probably a little harder on Coach K than most places. We bag on everyone. We are equal opportunity rip jobs. Never more apparent than the time Pat ripped on his own daughter's swim performance. So, I mean, literally everyone is in the crosshairs here. But I have always really enjoyed the times I have spoken with Mike Krzyzewski on a one-to-one. I mean, this is when you're with a guy like that, you can hate Duke. You can hate him as whatever you want. Like that's an impressive individual. And when he speaks to you and you're talking, it's very, it's not your average conversation. And I've always greatly enjoyed that. And that's kind of the thing, like with such great talent, I think we were talking about that with Dabo, like the ability to communicate. This is what you guys do so much better than the rest of us. Use it. And
yeah,
that's what I really liked about that. And I hope continues on. Yeah. But that's the last nice thing we're going to say about him for a while, because we don't want to get soft around here.
No, absolutely not. But that's the thing, too. Like what you're saying, Dan, is right. You come out of his office on the times you get to talk to him, which is not often. And you're like, man, that dude is at such a high level intellectually and just understanding his sphere and everything. Why don't we hear more from him on stuff like this? That's what I said. You know, there are times I would like to have heard more from Mike Krzyzewski throughout his career. But this was good.
Well, and I think it goes back to a conversation we had a couple weeks ago about, you know, the social issues. And it was always John Thompson, John Chaney, Nolan Richards, yeah. Some of these guys. And there are white coaches who would do it. Calipari is one that'll speak out on a lot of stuff to his credit. And it doesn't even you have to agree with whatever thing, but just guys that will take on certain challenges on issues. And it's similar, right? I always love John Chaney. Just love John Chaney. I mean, absolutely. You listen to talk to John, same situation. It's different, but at the same time, you're done talking to John Chaney or Nolan, but you're just like, man, that was something, right? Like, yeah. That was something. I can right. see why I would come play for you, or I would, and you know, or you sit with Dabo Sweeney, he's like, you're so fired up, you're ready to play football, and I'll run out there and take on FSU. Coach, sure, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll get murdered in the first play, but so it is really cool. But, you know, you would have liked maybe more of that. Maybe you will. I mean, it's the thing. It's like, what do you got to lose? Your coach, your damn Coach
Nothing.
K.
Nothing.
You got all the money, all the titles, all the gold. You don't win gold when you're a coach, but you know, let's do it. So, and I just thought it was a very good statement. Anyway, so that's where we're at. All right, some breaking basketball news. 2022, best player in America, maybe the best high school player in the country, regardless. I think he was named National Gatorade Player of the Year, even though he's a sophomore last year. Amani Bates, Ypsilanti, Michigan. He's already been on the cover, SI. Considered one of these kind of every 5 to 10 year player, maybe the best high school player since LeBron. He's really, really good. Now, he committed this week to Michigan State. Michigan State, to their credit, has recruited him like it was 1988 and they could really get him for 4 years. Like, they have worked Amani Bates when a lot of schools just said, forget it. The NBA is going to change the initial eligibility rules. He's going to be able to go straight out of high school, or he's going to go up to the G League or whatever. They've recruited him. He very well could do 1 year in East Lansing. He likes it. He's not I don't know if I would say typical, but he's certainly an interesting top prospect. His father is not looking to ship him out all over the place. And so maybe he shows up at Michigan State. Thoughts on the Amani Bates commitment?
Very interesting. Let's see if it happens. Obviously, it's going to be super wait and see on that. No, it won't. But the game changer could be name, image, and likeness with him. And boy, wouldn't that be strange bedfellows, because Tom Izzo is not your name, image, and likeness champion. Okay. Tom Izzo, very much to his credit and sometimes maybe to his detriment, is coaching like it's still 1988 and wants to run his program that way. And so does he say, yeah, you know, we're going to, you know, let this kid be the marketing star? If that's the rules, then yeah, I think he would. I think he's smart enough to say, yeah, okay, good. Do what you got to do, man. As long as I get to coach him for a year, maybe we win the national championship with Amani Bates, and then he goes on his way. It would be very interesting just to see those two together. If he would coach him, fine. He'd be fine on the court, I am sure. But the marriage of the like poster child for the new rules and the new generation with a coach who wants nothing to do with the new rules and the new generation.
So I'm always like the cooler on here and giving away the bad news. Amani Bates isn't going to take a dribble at Michigan State. There's zero chance. This is a genius marketing move by both Bates and Izzo. For one, 10 years from now, Izzo or whoever replaces him, they can put a banner up for Amani Bates. They can, if Amani Bates has his own shoe brand by then, and he seems like that caliber player, they can be an Air Bates first team, whatever. Like, the affiliation with Amani Bates is worth a ton. And you can theoretically recruit other players to come play with him. But the thought is, in that rising junior class right now, there are few of those guys who are going to play college basketball who are of that talent. I do not think Amani Bates takes a dribble. I think that he is going to utilize the new system. Now, look, we've been cautioned that the 2022 draft, which he would have been the number one pick in, may not be open to high schoolers because the NBAPA essentially hasn't relented on medicals. The agents basically don't want to give up their leverage before the draft and say, all right, we don't want to give the Kings our medicals, right? So that is really the big roadblock in that 2022 draft. But if not, he's going to go to the G League, make big money, and then eventually go pro. I don't think he takes a dribble for Michigan State, but I think it's smart for Amani Bates because it inserts him back in the news in a summer that he would have dominated the headlines of summer basketball, right? Would have been the Amani Bates show and Amani plays Bronny and all this stuff. We're not going to have any of that because of Corona. So this is a great ruse to get his name out there again. He's on ESPN on Monday. And I really think that it's wise for him to affiliate himself with Michigan State, and it's wise for Michigan State to affiliate themselves with Amani. But it ain't.
Michigan State has certainly tried to affiliate themselves with Amani Bates by recruiting him, like I said, very hard and in a traditional manner. So I think he shows up, probably not. There's so much money, and you know, I know people say, oh, it'd take a year. Amani Bates will be offered a $75 million shoe deal as he graduates high school. Something like that. If that's what you would be projecting toward, $60-70 million, something in line. LeBron got 90, Zion I think got 75. If you can get $60-70 million, this is generational, multi-generational wealth beyond any. Hey, the money's always there. What? Forget it. So really hard to imagine. That said, maybe he's allowed to get that because of name, image, and likeness. Like I said, he's a little bit different of a guy, maybe, but I would put the chances of him playing for Michigan State at 1%. But good on both of them. A little interesting that he will be a little more beloved by the Michigan State fans. Ypsilanti is bordering Ann Arbor. He lives just a few minutes from Michigan. Some local fans probably not that excited about it. Could have also committed to Eastern Michigan, Ypsilanti's own. I mean, that would have been. It does answer the one debate that you can always get with LeBron is where would he have actually gone to high school? Because people say, well, it would have been Ohio State.
College.
But his old coach, Keith Dambrot, always says he would have gone to Akron with him.
Yeah.
Which would have been awesome if he had just taken the whole team from St. Vincent, St. Mary's and headed over to University of Akron for 1 year. I always thought that would have been one of the great.
Oh.
Just would have been fun. Would have been a fun thing. And it would be like similarly, like imagine if Amani Bates is like, hey, we're all going to go to Eastern Michigan. I'm going to round up the other. Do something like that. Just be fun. Fun story. So, but Ohio State literally put a locker, and he's probably still there, in their locker room. LeBron James has a locker at the Ohio State locker room.
Yeah, this is the same thing where you, even if you don't get Amani Bates, you get the ancillary connection to Amani Bates that you can use and market.
LeBron never committed there.
No.
Like, at least Amani Bates committed. Yeah. Like, LeBron is just an Ohio State fan. Like, everybody else who grows up in Ohio, he likes Ohio State football. So,
Kentucky claims Enes Kanter as one of their lottery picks, even though he never played there.
Oh, yes, they do.
Trust the development. Did he practice?
Yeah.
I mean, it's more than LeBron in Ohio.
I think he went to Keeneland, so it's like the same thing.
Good enough.
LeBron never had anything to do with Ohio State.
No.
I mean, that's a reach. That's a reach. At least Enes tried, I guess, to play. But, yeah, can't really say. Anyway, take what you can get. MSU, big dreams. Dream it up. But, no. Okay. I mean, you're talking that kind of money. It ain't just like, well, you could make $1 million. No, he can make money that – his grandchildren will still be living off of at age 18. So, all right, this is maybe the biggest news of the week. And I don't know if this is bad luck for these schools or the canary in the coal mine, but Under Armour is trying to terminate its $280 million contract with UCLA. And potentially we are hearing another $86 million one with Cal Berkeley. Nike lost a ton of money in the last quarter and is laying people off. I don't know where UCLA goes. UCLA already has financial problems. They're never going to just load up the Rose Bowl with 100,000 fans every weekend unless they get really good, like really good. And that's probably
I believe in Chip.
Yeah, Chip's got to
keep saying it.
I know. I know.
Well, if you watch the show on Netflix, All American, which I have, Chip makes an appearance. He signs the one of the star players. And so maybe the kid quarterback from Crenshaw High. So I think maybe that'll turn it around. That was pretty funny. Chip as an actor is he's a good football coach. I'll say. And he was playing Chip Kelly. That's the one.
Doesn't even play himself well.
I'm like, hey, Chip Kelly. I'm like, why is he so awkward playing himself? His whole role, his whole cameo was to try to tell the kid, do you want to come to UCLA and play for me? I'm like, don't you do this every day?
Chip only speaks in sarcasm. Like, that's his, like, only dialect.
Yeah.
So I think anything that's outside of that is a little bit uncomfortable.
Is he any better than Mac Brown in Friday Night Lights?
Probably, yeah. Even Saban was better in the Blind Side. Yeah, his whole role was just it was a brief cameo, and he couldn't quite do it. I think the part that always bothered Saban about the Blind Side is he's in an LSU jersey. Yeah, Coach O's in an Ole Miss one, so
yeah, right.
Show doesn't really hold that well, but that might do it. But anyway, you could tell when Chip on camera, you could tell someone's like, you have to do this. Like, this show is the single most popular show amongst high school kids in America. And yeah, right. It's like, you have to do this. It'll be good for recruiting. And you could just tell he's like, what? Yeah.
Did he have an Under Armour shirt on it?
He had a UCLA shirt, I think. Probably had an Under Armour shirt.
Probably had an Under Armour logo on the UCLA shirt. Right.
He got the commitment. He got the commitment. So
there you go.
Yeah. He's got his QB of the future.
He ain't getting many commitments in real life. So it's good he's getting them in on the screen.
He's getting it there. He had to hold off on the receiver from Beverly Hills High or whatever it is, the main school. It's big. It's big. Great show. Anyway, UCLA loses $280 million contract. They're in a lot of trouble. I mean, Cal. And but this is it. Is it just this? Or I mean, is Maryland going to get bumped? But then is it – we've always wondered, like, how long can these $100 million deals go?
Mm-hmm.
What happens in college athletics business that has only known growth if it all of a sudden flatlines, let alone retreats?
I don't think anybody is ready for it, and that's the thing I go back to. Geez, the pandemic seems like it's gone on for three centuries, but it's only been a couple of months. And talking to one Power 5 AD who's like, yeah, we built our budget on best case scenario because that's all we've had is best case scenario. I mean, it's just, they have made more and more money hand over fist year after year, year after year, year after year. And that's all they're used to. And it became bring it, rake it in and spend it. And now all of a sudden you start seeing some cracks in the foundation. What do they do? First of all, do you have enough of a reserve to get through a catastrophic year, like a year with no football? You would like to think they would. You'd like to think there was at least that much business solvency or business sense. That, okay, maybe this isn't going to go on forever. Maybe we better have $50 million in reserve just in case. But that may not happen at a lot of places. And then, gosh almighty, I mean, the fallout, if we don't have a football season and people are losing not just $10 million, $15 million, but $30, $40, $50, $60 million, I think could get really, really ugly. And so that's where you're looking at things like this, like shoe contracts that you are used to getting outrageous sums. And when Under Armour signed UCLA, we were all like, holy moly, for that much? And maybe that's, Under Armour certainly earned itself a niche within college sports. They did it. They went and got it. But maybe they've overpaid along the way to an extent that now they're trying to reel it back in. And in the process of reeling it back in, you're taking basically you're the equivalent of an addict off of their supply. And how's the addict going to respond? I don't know. We need a 12-step group for all Power 5 or Group of 5 athletic departments out there that are addicted to easy cash.
Yeah, the Under Armour sort of rise and now the start of their or the continuation of their fall in college athletics has been a pretty intriguing study. Kevin Plank, who's obviously started Under Armour and created a billion-dollar company. It's a great story. You know, the New Yorker profile in that length a couple years ago, I remember, you know, was out of the back of his car, and he was a walk-on at Maryland and hated the cotton shirt and invented essentially the dry fit and got Georgia Tech on board first and slept in the Notre Dame locker room the night before their stuff was going to debut. It's an unbelievable story. And their ambition, essentially, I mean, they've overreached here. Now, and they also went into basketball, which about 5 or 6 years ago, I wrote about it at Sports Illustrated, basically created another bidder in the market for these players. And it totally put the recruiting market crazy. Like Under Armour brought in a recruiting guy. They sponsored a bunch of these teams. They wanted in so bad. And I don't think that cost was a huge like problem for them, right? It was new money. It was classic new money being spent blindly. And the UCLA deal, publicly anyway, is still the largest deal in all of college athletics, which is kind of crazy to do for UCLA, which is a very good athletic program, but it's not, you know, it's not a top 10 athletic program. $280 million for them. The Cal one was just like, yeah, well, we're out here. We'll drop another couple, another $100 million on Cal too and go. Now, we'll be curious to see how deep the financial stress is at Under Armour. Do they rescind on Notre Dame? Which that has been their big, big bell cow in all this. But more important than that, Maryland has essentially been Kevin Plank's personal playground. He played there. He has sponsored it. That was the first, you know, big basketball school that went with them, you know, and get much to Gary Williams' resistance, by the way. He wanted to stay with Nike because kids want to play, you know, for Nike schools. That's long been a truism no matter what. So is Under Armour going to pull out of Maryland, the new $400 million field house kind of renovation project that they built there out of the old coal is, I believe, named for Under Armour. And it's supposed to be state of the art and beautiful and all these things. Now we're really starting to see, okay, did Under Armour just write these off as two bad deals on West Coast schools that don't really have a lot of traction in the college sports world? Or are they going to go really to the heart of that college business? Because correct me if I'm wrong, they also have Wisconsin. They signed a deal pretty recently too. South Carolina, Boston College, they had Texas Tech for years. You know, they are and have been a factor. You know, they had like 7 or 8 NCAA tournament schools a few years ago. They've really gone their tentacles in deep. It'll be interesting to see how much they now pull out.
Well, I think too, it's like if you're not playing games, are all these contracts at risk? I don't think Nike's going to dump Michigan. But does they sit there and say we want to claw some money back because we're selling? We're here to sell T-shirts. We're here to get exposure for our teams. And all of a sudden, there's if the college football season, let's say there's no fans in the stands, or let's say there's 25%. Well, do we get some money back if there's only 8 games and not 14? Do we get that percent back? What if there's not a bat? I mean. It's all money, and that's more money that would be lost that I think the schools, you bank one of these deals, of course you're going to budget for having the money. Who the hell saw a pandemic coming? So it's tough. And obviously UCLA, there's not going to be any other options. No one's going to swoop in. Although I do think UCLA has some of the greatest uniforms.
Oh, always. That's
the blue gold, the all white. I mean, they switch it up too. I mean, they're terrific. Everyone gives Oregon all this hype, man. Nothing's better than UCLA's.
I agree. UCLA powder blues with the gold pants and the gold helmets is as good as it gets.
And they're all white one, too. It's just like,
It's a good
they
look.
Got good, they good got good look. Stuff, man.
But again, you got great uniforms. You're in Southern California. It's a great school. It's a great area. It's great everything. Why aren't they great? I just have never understood it.
You remember the little flare-up with Josh Rosen when UCLA signed the deal? He kind of said, oh, but we're still amateurs, to do that. So it's interesting to see that was, all of, 2016? So 4 years ago, just a little over 4 years ago. And how that conversation has changed just in 4 years from all that. And you do wonder, too, now, to go a little conspiracy theory, like, does Under Armour realize these big school contracts aren't really what is going to move product? But maybe they want more individualized ones for players. right? Is this? I'm just totally spitballing here.
No, this that's like, kind of my thing. Is this rock the industry, and all of a sudden Nike's sitting there saying, "Well, look, Under Armour's out, and Adidas is, you know, like, we're not going to give you, we want some money back. What are you going to do about it?
Right.
We're going to sue you. We're going to try this. We're or the next deal that comes up. We're just not. There's less people to bid. It's that's got to scare the hell out of everyone. If Under Armour can get out of this, why can't Nike cut back on some of theirs?
Sure.
Maybe they don't dump them, but.
Yeah. If you're a school and your apparel contract's coming up within the next year, you're watching this going, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Because the market just tanked.
Well, this is way worse for Cal than UCLA. UCLA is going to get a deal. Now, it's not going to be that crazy number that Under Armour gave them. But, like, it's still UCLA. It's still a great brand. They're going to have great basketball again. Chip will lead the revival. But, like, you want to be associated with them. Cal? I mean, nope. Nobody's dying to get associated with Cal right now.
Well, and Cal has been horribly upside down financially for years now. That's the thing. They are already in a position of extreme duress from that standpoint. And this only could make it worse.
All right. We want to continue our State of the Conference series. And we're going to do the Big 12 today. And then later in the week, going to do the Big 10. And then next week, after the July 4th holiday, we'll have the SEC one. Plan your summer accordingly. Check local listings. The Big 12 Conference. We already did the Pac-12 and we did the ACC. You guys did it. I didn't. I was on vacation. But
that was when we got record listenership.
Record listenership.
Yeah. If I don't know if you remember that, Pat, but
I think we need to bring that up just every once in a while.
More than willing to hang up now. Hang up and listen.
You're going Under Armour on us? You're pulling
There's a
out.
Fairway with I can go hit some golf balls. Don't worry. I can find something to do. State of the Big 12. So look, one of the interesting things about the Big 12 is that everyone always thought it was going to get picked apart, broken up, nearly split a couple times. It's been it was the smallest of leagues, you know, number of teams and all that, but it has held on, and it's going along. There's basketball and other sports, but football is the main one. The general health of the conference, both on the field and off. Pete, why don't we start with you on this one?
You know, I think the general health of the conference compared to 5-6 years ago is really strong. It is clearly not in the same fiscal situation as the SEC and the Big Ten, but it is clearly upper middle class right now. It is clearly safe. The Bob Bowlsby's done a great job smoothing things out in that league. Texas is flailing on the field and on the court, quite frankly, has limited its ability to be chesty. Because Texas being chesty started a lot of this, started a lot of the unrest now 10 plus years ago. And so it's hard to be chesty when you're when you're losing to Oklahoma State pretty much every year. Yeah. So
when you're no good.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So I just think, like, who knows what the next iteration of that stuff is going to look like. But I would say that it has been as serene a period as we've seen the past 3-4 years in the Big 12, compared to the past decade. So I would think, considering it is always really only going to be a two-horse league, right? You really only have two dominant national brands in that league. The league has done a good job. Like, I don't know if you guys have been to Baylor in the past 2 years, but they have way better facilities than Texas. Texas Tech has really built, you know, solid, solid facilities. Oklahoma State's always been very, very invested. Kansas is a lot more relevant now with less, as opposed to just that they just had a decade of miserable coaching hires there. My God, what administrative negligence they had. You know, you go Charlie Weiss, Turner Gill, David Beatty. I mean, it was just a disaster there. So that at least has given them some, like, stability, some direction, some recruiting momentum. K-State, I think, is trending up right now. They have built smarter than maybe any athletic department between John Curry and Gene Taylor there. They've always had a great vision. So no, just in terms of the macro in the league, I have good vibes about the Big 12. They've been a regular playoff participant, meaning Oklahoma has been. They're on solid footing.
I'm a little less bullish, Pete. I don't know. Okay. I mean, you're right that they have absolutely solidified from where they were when it looked like they may be doomed to failure. But Yeah, they're getting a team in the playoff, and that team is getting absolutely ransacked every time. And it's only Oklahoma. Oklahoma is head and shoulders above the rest of the Big 12 and head and shoulders behind the best teams in the country. So you've got the elite, you got Oklahoma, then you got a big gap towards to the rest of the Big 12. I think when, no disrespect to Iowa State and Matt Campbell, who's a hell of a coach, but when Iowa State has risen up to be number 2-3 in the league pretty regularly there, that means the rest of the league is not doing its job. The Texas certainly most obviously is not doing its job, and the other schools in that state probably aren't either. Now, Matt Rhule got Baylor up off the mat, and that was important, but Matt Rhule's now gone. And so is that going to be sustained there or not? TCU has had some very good years. Gary Patterson's done an unbelievable job there, but they've also been a little bit hit and miss, up and down. Last year, they're 1-5 in bowl games, and I know bowl games aren't necessarily a great indicator, but like Baylor was not competitive against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. And that was Baylor. You know, they were supposed to be the second best team. They were not competitive in that game. They had the fewest NFL draft picks of any of the Power Five schools. They need some people to rise up and challenge Oklahoma, and that, of course, means we are talking to you, Texas. Do it on a regular basis. A couple years ago when they made the Big 12 championship game, you think, okay, here they come with Herman, and then last year, big step back. Now he's blown up everything as far as his staff and redone it, and we'll see if that gets them back forward. But they need somebody other than an Oklahoma team that's overmatched against the best of the teams to rise up and make that league more than a one-trick pony.
Look, financially, it just can't compete with the Big 12, Big 10 and the SEC just because of population. I mean, it's just not enough people live in Kansas, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, so, Iowa. You know, Iowa. You got Texas, but you just don't have these other states, and it just isn't enough people. So that's reality, and that's always going to be reality. I think what they've done, and part of it is Texas's woes, is the, you know, I always argued that the best thing that could happen in the Big 12 is that they get an automatic bid to the playoff, and the playoff goes to 8, which I think will happen. Because if with an automatic bid, you basically are then able to sell Oklahoma and Texas, you're not going anywhere. Because your best route to the playoff is staying put. And as long as neither of those two schools think the grass is greener somewhere else, then they're not going anywhere. And I would contend that unless Oklahoma and Texas think the reason we're not signing enough talent or not don't have enough talent is because our league is holding us back, then they won't leave. And that's the number one concern for the Big 12 is the stability. Because if Oklahoma and Texas get wandering eyes, that league is done. Nobody's coming for any of the other schools. Now, like you guys mentioned, I think Kansas State does more than any other school in the country, with more with less. Like, that, you know, and they got Chris Klieman there, the coach. I mean, they get, you know, they do a really good job considering they got nothing. I mean, we've all been to Manhattan. Everyone been there? The Little Apple?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
More times than I want to count.
Yeah, I mean, it is out there. I remember hearing this old story of, it was about a football assistant coach. It was kind of a story they used to tell around Kansas State athletics. And he had picked this recruit up in Kansas City Airport. And he's driving him all the way to Manhattan, which is, I think, like two and a half hours.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to look at.
It's a true 2.5. You can't cheat it.
For like 3 minutes, you get to, for like 37 seconds, you can see the skyline of Topeka. And I mean, that'll take your breath away, of course. But, so this guy is telling the recruit, it's Kansas. I mean, we got this. And this kid's just not saying a word, staring out the window, has got nothing to say. And he's trying to pump it up. Hey, we've got this. We're the best at this. We're the best. He says, and finally just goes, boy, you know, we got one of the best highways. This highway is, look how smooth this highway is. It's the smoothest highway you'll ever ride on. The guy goes, longest one, too. And like, let's just turn the car around and get back to MCO or whatever Kansas City's airport is.
I love that kid. Yeah. Having driven all 7 hours east to west, west to east of Kansas when I was growing up in Colorado and going to school at Missouri, it's a long one.
It's so flat, too. I mean, they do get hilly by Kansas State, but you can, like, stand on a soup can and see Colorado. Like, so, I mean, it's long, man. see a dog run away for like 3 days.
So Wetzel helping listenership in Kansas.
Yeah,
State.
Here I say something nice about them.
Yeah. The people, at people all the Kansas and the State fans Manhattan like, are going to rally together and take the podcast down.
We love this dude. He's saying something nice about Kansas State. Anyway, yeah. The biggest thing is keeping the Texas and Oklahoma. And then, but as you said, now if we can move on to the next step, Oklahoma basically has a free ride to the playoff if they win. I mean, you know, they've got a pretty good go of it. These other schools need to step up, mainly Texas. I mean, it's got to be Texas. We talked about, I think at the draft, I can't remember the stat, but wasn't it like 14, the first, there was it 14 or 23 high school players from Texas were recruited?
Oh, right.
Texas high school players were drafted before one came from Texas or Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Now, some of those guys obviously are at the other schools, but, you know, there's plenty of talent. They just have to. They have to be Texas's league, but it's apparent they the entire league signed 1 5-star last year. Bijan Robinson from Arizona, from Tucson, Arizona, is going to Texas. That's it. Yeah. The whole league got one 5-star. That isn't enough.
No. Yeah.
And Oklahoma has very good talent. Maybe Lincoln Riley can. I think Lincoln Riley's got another gear in him. I think he can take Oklahoma a little higher, but they need Texas to be really good. Otherwise, you have, you know, like I said, K-State's kind of maximizing. TCU's kind of, done really well. But there's just limits on how good can Kansas State be? How good can Iowa State be? How good can, I think they need Baylor to be really good again.
I don't think Baylor's going to be good this year. We can get into that.
No, I don't know about this year. But
let me jump in, Dan. Yeah. You just mentioned recruiting and stars and this offseason, I heard an interesting theory from a Big 12 coach on why that the Big 12 has especially struggled recruiting on the defensive side of the ball, right? Like that's one place where you go. So a majority of Big 12 schools play three down up front, three defensive linemen, right? And in fact, Iowa State and Baylor have sort of popularized that kind of crazy, funky drop eight defense that was really successful. It's been for both of them. Haycock did it at Iowa State. Phil Snow did it at Baylor. So according to coaches in that league, three down, like if you are a big time recruit and you want to play in the NFL, a three down offensive line is not the best place to get. It is not the best way to get you there. Just because, again, everyone's multiple now and all this stuff, but it is more conventional and kind of fits better from one to the other if you play a four down. So supposedly that has scared off some of the recruits from that footprint. Anyway, that's a little inside baseball, probably too much football for Dan to handle right now. He's going to start talking about soup cans again and skylines. But I just thought I had just never heard that when you try to dial into why the Big 12 has struggled. Now, some of it is like a lot of those programs don't put a lot of, just a lot of emphasis on defense, quite frankly. It's been a scoring league. But I just never heard that theory. Thought it was interesting. Thought I would share it.
I don't know why I needed to be attacked in that theory. I thought there was. I was sitting here listening intently to your point.
Sorry, I can't hear you and up on then, your soup can. Can you repeat that?
It turned into an attack. And
oh, my attack. God. What did I do?
I will say.
You've been watching The Wire, Pete. I'm like Jimmy McNulty.
Yeah.
What the F did I do now? Right?
Coach Kiffin, you've had it coming to you.
Yeah. All right. Pat, what do you got here?
No, I will say, like, I think it's going to be pretty fun, exciting league this year. And I will say, look, their games, I had a stat in my realignment thing. Like, there were by far fewer blowouts in the Big 12 than any other league. So they played close games. They played exciting games, which is at least if you're a fan of the league and you're watching, it's like, okay, the 11 o'clock kickoff local is, hey, it's a close game. I'll watch all of it. And you watch the next one, you'll watch the next one because they're all going to be good games. And I'm looking at who's coming back this year. Good quarterbacks. Sam Ellinger, Brock Purdy, Charlie Brewer provided, all the headshots he took last year, but the running backs, Chuba Hubbard, Kennedy Brooks, Puka Williams, receivers, Tylan Wallace, Charleston Rambo, that name alone, Charleston Rambo, he should catch every pass if I'm Oklahoma. Yep, Spencer Rattler throwing to Charleston Rambo. Who doesn't want to watch that combination like all the time? So I think that it's going to be a very fun year, and maybe maybe it ends up being you have more than one good team in this league this year.
It is wide open for Oklahoma State. Wide open right now. Like, as Gundy's been there, as we've looked at his trend lines, we've certainly talked a lot about Oklahoma State on the podcast, much more so the last 3 weeks, and they've certainly earned their pod scrutiny. But just from a pure playing perspective, this is one of those times every 5 years or so where Oklahoma State has a chance to rise up and a legitimate chance to win that league. Obviously their offensive skill. Now their quarterback is just okay. He's more of a runner. He's not particularly accurate, but he has another year. And like Gundy's teams are always going to score points. Wallace is the best most productive screen pass catcher in all of college football, according to Pro Football Focus. Chuba led the nation in rushing. Like they are a problem. They are a problem every time they roll out there. They return a majority of their offensive line. They got a key O-line transfer from West Virginia. They return 11 starters on defense. They did lose a decent DB. But the thought there is that 2 years ago, their defense was awful. They brought in Jim Knowles, and they got 6 points better per game on defense under Knowles. They went from 32.5 points a game to 26.8 points a game. If they can get down somewhere around 21 points a game, I mean, and learn how to contain Oklahoma, slow down Sam Ehlinger, et cetera, I really think that they can win that league. They have the perfect out of conference schedule to do it. Their only Power Five game is against Oregon State. Oregon State is clearly better than they were, but there's still that's a home game, and that's not exactly scary. And then they go Tulsa at home. Tulsa hasn't been very good in a while. And then they're Western Illinois at home. They go to TCU. I don't think TCU is going to be great this year. And then they have the kind of swing teams in the league. Both Texas and Iowa State end up in Stillwater. They have to go to Norman, which obviously is going to be difficult. I don't think Baylor is going to be what they were because of all their losses on defense, although I do like Brewer a lot. Let's hope he stays healthy. So anyway, it's all there for Oklahoma State. I'm not going to stand on a table and going to predict they win, but I feel pretty good about saying this is as good of a chance they have to contend for the league title as they had in the last few years.
I got two words for you. Spencer Rattler.
There we go.
I know he hasn't won the OU. He has not won the Oklahoma quarterback job yet, but I'm giving it to him because his name is Spencer Rattler. This is perfect.
Could we get Rattler to Rambo pod t-shirts?
Yes. Rattler to Rambo. I mean, this guy was born to be
sleeps in Norman, baby.
Always sleeps in Norman. The Rattler. I think Oklahoma's still a team to beat. We'll see. See what happens at Bedlam.
They lost a lot on defense. You know, Kenneth Murray was a big fulcrum of what they did. I have a lot of faith in Alex Grinch, the coordinator, but there's a lot of holes to plug in and fill there in a defense that's still amid a cultural overhaul.
You're right on there, Pete. And they don't have a defensive lineman over 300 pounds. So that's a red flag right there.
Slim. They're slim up there. Keto diet.
it's because
they play Tennessee in the early on. So it's Sully's typing Sully, up and Sully's trying to talk.
Sully's got been, the full break.
Yeah, don't kid yourself. There. He's down on this Oklahoma situation for one reason.
Yeah. Well, and it's not a coincidence that Tennessee's got a pretty good offensive line coming back, too. Yeah. So Sully's already identified the mismatch.
We will see. But I think Oklahoma's team to beat to me. But overall, Texas should be better. They always should be good. And then I'm with you. I think Baylor steps back and what can TCU and what can Kansas State do? And what can Iowa State do? But as a full conference, that middle class has to get stronger. Texas has to reach Oklahoma's standard of being a national contender. And I know they're losing games in the playoff, but they're a legit team. And then the other guys have to get stronger because you can't take that big of a step back. You can't be head and shoulders to the rest. And that's what they're at right now. I think just the hard part for all those programs is just what's the ceiling, because there are ceilings on what you can do. And
well, I know one of my Friday friends who listens often seeks our advice on over-unders. I have no idea what the over-unders are in the Big 12. But Pat and Dan, if you had to pick one team to maybe overachieve and one team you think is going to underachieve per where they're predicted, who would be your over-under, overs and unders?
My overachiever is going to be Texas Tech. second year under a coach. I think the second time you go around through something, you get better. Everybody gets more comfortable. And they got a lot of people coming back, both sides of the ball, offense and defense. Alan Bowman, quarterback, was not great, but he's going to get better. He shared the position with Jet Duffy. Jet Duffy's gone. So I think he's going to get better. And then defensively, you got enough people back there. They certainly should be not be 4-8. So you take them and you put them in a bowl game. Maybe they're 7-5. They have a 3-game improvement. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know what would be over or under. I mean, I don't know where you would rank Kansas State, but I just think they have the coaching. I mean, you know, they won four. What do you win? Four national titles up at North Dakota State.
Yeah,
as a head coach,
he's good.
Yeah. As the head coach, yeah. Right. I mean, I just think when you have and then they go 8-5 last year, beat Oklahoma, beat Iowa State, like beat TCU. You know, I don't know. I just think the coaching level could be exceptionally high. And when they are high, they were under Bill Snyder. Kansas State can do really well. So I don't know if that – I don't know. They're over under tally. If I'd done any homework, would probably be interesting to see. But I certainly can see Kansas State being a contender that punches above its weight and wins that extra game or two that puts them right up there in contention for the league title game. Do I think they're better than Oklahoma? No, but they beat Oklahoma last year. So we'll see what kind of momentum.
Sully just sent us the win totals for the Big 12. And yeah, he's got Texas Tech at 5.5. I'll take the over on that. And I will take the under on Baylor at 7.5.
What else we got? What are the others? Oh, here
we got all right. Oklahoma at 9.5. Why not? I like the over on that. I think.
Oh, I do too. Yeah.
Texas at 8.5. Oklahoma State at 8.5. I like the over there. Baylor 7.5. Iowa State 7.5. TCU 6.5. And I kind of like the under there. TCU lost everybody from a not very good team. They got issues there a little bit. Kansas State 6.5. Texas Tech 5.5. West Virginia 5.5. Kansas 3.5.
Kansas State at 6.5.
Load up on the Les Miles over, by the way. Like, they've got two high-end receivers. They got Puka Williams coming back. They've got a recruiting thrust from when Les got there. They've got much better players. My whole theory on the Big 12, if you're looking at it from an over-under perspective, is the middle class stinks. All right. I think you have three high-end teams, and then I think that middle group is indistinguishable. So I think Kansas can go steal a few of those games. It's 3.5, too. So, I'd have to look again. I looked last night at what their non-conference is. I think they play...
They play New Hampshire and Coastal Carolina. So.
Yeah, and there's two. So
and you got Boston bang on College.
Yeah. You got to bang on them winning two league games.
Yeah. When was the last time they won two league
games? And can't they beat Boston College visiting...
Been a long time.
BC at Kansas. There's a game everyone was looking for.
I went to that game last year and wrote about it.
Yeah. You walk into Lawrence, man, and that's a serious situation there. They might have upwards of 8,000 people there.
I think Kansas State's got Buffalo, North Dakota, and Vanderbilt, and they got 6.5. So you're going to tell me they can't win four league games?
I would take
the under on Baylor. I agree with, as much as I hate to agree with Pat because he's so bad at giving betting advice, as the pod last fall proved. But I just think when you look at what Baylor has lost defensively, like Charlie Brewer's great and they have a little bit of skill back, even though Mims is gone. But like that defense was the heart and soul of that team. And not only do you have a ton of new players, but you have a completely new system. So you've got players buy in from a system that clearly worked. They played over their talent before. They lose all three of their defensive linemen who were starters last year, two of whom were drafted, one of whom is league player of the year on defense. I just really think and you have no spring practice, right? So now Larry Fedora with Charlie Brewer could prove me wrong, but I just don't think they're going to be able to stop anyone.
Kansas State's going to start 4-0. Buffalo, North Dakota, Vanderbilt all at home at West Virginia, setting up a big showdown with Texas.
Dan's just trying to curry favor back after he told his highway joke.
Very popular, the little apple.
Yes.
Watching your dog run away for 3 days was good. I like that.
Okay. All right. We got a people's court to settle this, send this out, okay?
Okay.
People's court.
Let's hear it.
All right. A Louisiana man, Kevin Wise, 26, Slidell, Louisiana. He was visiting his local Bass Pro Shop. Fantastic. I love the Bass Pro Shop. Cabela's, all those places.
Spend days in there.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm not even a big outdoorsy guy, but it's just looking at all the stuff. It's great. And as most Bass Pro Shops, it's got a tank, like an aquarium with fish and different things in it. And Kevin Wise went on the TikTok, social media TikTok. Mm-hmm. I've been hyping up for a long time here. Put out a TikTok that said, well, I'll get to the TikTok. First, he decides he is going to jump in the tank. He's going to jump in the aquarium. And he does. He jumps in, swims around a little bit, jumps out of the aquarium. Maybe it was hot. It's hot in Louisiana right now. Climbs out and then makes a run for it, but then returns. Because I think they knew it was him. I mean, he was going to get caught.
It's hard to deny it when you're soaking wet.
I don't know. He returned. This could be part of the decision you're going to be asked to make. Anyway, Bossier City Parish, Bossier City Police, not the parish police, arrest him on a simple criminal damage charge, a misdemeanor. And he is going to have to incur the cost for cleaning the 13,000 gallon tank. That the store, because the store has to empty and then clean the tank. So he really screws it up. So here is the ruling. First of all, I think any of us who've ever been to an aquarium, been to a Bass Pro Shop, seen, I don't care if it's the penny fountain at the mall or when you're at like that, you know, the Disney World, where you got those, like, you're standing in line with the sun beating down on you and they got like that Thunder Mountain River. Like, what if I just jump in that for a little bit? Take a quick dip. I think we've all thought about it. At some point, what would happen I just, like, that would be pretty cool to get in there. Don't do it. Don't do it. It's not fair to the animals and you're going to get arrested and all that. However, his defense, now here's his defense. Kevin Wise says he went on the TikTok. He made a TikTok and said, I promised, he said, if I got 2,000 likes on this TikTok, I will jump in this tank. Well, the TikTok fans, the patrons of TikTok, liked it. He said, I got way more than that. Hence, he felt compelled to return to the store and jump in because, quote, didn't want to be a liar, end quote.
Paragon of ethics.
So here it is. Do you go easy on defendant Wise because they're really... He was engaging in honesty is the best policy and trying not to be a liar on TikTok. Or do you say no, drop the hammer on him. You can't be swimming in the Bass Pro Shop tank, 13,000 gallon tank, no matter how hot it is in Shreveport, where it's clearly not sleeting right now, for one.
Just this week.
For once, it's not sleeting.
Takes 4th of July off from sleeting.
That's right. That's it.
He was wearing a coronavirus mask before jumping in also. Maybe that helps.
Okay. So he's
he had his mask.
Socially responsible.
He did not wear the mask in the tank, which means he could have infected a fish or something. I don't know. Anyway, Justice 40, your ruling on Defendant Wise.
First of all, there's several things we need to address here. First of all, his name is Wise. He is not aptly named. Okay. He's a moron. He's a complete idiot. What was he wearing? Did he jump in his clothes, his shoes? I mean, did he wear everything in there? Do we know?
He's got his shoes. He's got like khaki shorts, a t-shirt, and he literally like doggy paddles. I mean, it's a terrible swimming form. You would be outraged at the form. Yeah. Then he climbs up the fake mountain. And
that's going to give him a life sentence for his bad swimming.
He's got his underwear on. I think he's got a belt. Yeah, there he goes running out.
Okay.
He runs through the Carhartt section.
I am throwing the book at him. For
terrible swimming form. This guy can't swim for a lick.
Being a bad swimmer is one part of it. And two, fouling up the fishing hole. Look, I like the fish. You don't do that to the fish. So here's his punishment. You go back in when they got to take everything out and clean it up, and you put him in there, and you get everybody can throw a treble hook at him on a on a lure and try to hook him. He doesn't have go to jail, but he does have to be susceptible to being foul hooked in the head or the belly or whatever.
It's like 1752, and you're going to tar and feather the guy?
No, I'm not, but we're going to see if we can hook us a big one. We're going to catch this dude.
Well, there's no... this is Frontier Justice in Bossier, man.
That's right. Bossier City.
Bossier, whatever.
Bossier City. Yep. But yes, that's right. We're going after this dude.
I thought that I had two punitive things in my people's court that I wanted to do. Certainly, you'd rather get Judge Thamel on this one than Judge 40, the swimming snob. One is he has to cancel his TikTok account. If you are addicted to the likes, you got to get rid of them. Tell the Wetzel daughters to unfollow him on TikTok. He's out. Yeah. Okay. The second thing is, forget some weird fly hook or whatever. Just make him clean the damn tank. That's enough punishment. Pay the fine, clean the tank. Get him off social media. Get him back to the real world.
I like that. Like a toothbrush, too. Like, right? Don't they do that in the army? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Too easy.
Quite a video, though. I mean, it is really funny. I've walked by those tanks before and said, the fish don't even care.
I'm throwing a crankbait at him and I'm catching
fish
him.
Don't even notice him. With
Would
the
it
shoes
be bad
on,
to admit on our podcast,
his shoes.
Considering our constituency, that I've never been to a Bass Pro Shop?
No, nobody's surprised, Pete. None of our listeners are surprised.
I mean, I don't fish. So
doesn't matter.
You really eliminate a lot of the need to go to a Bass Pro Shop.
Doesn't
There's
matter.
There's not a lot of crossover between the Tito's drinkers and the Bass Pro Shop, though. So they're mutually exclusive.
If they had camouflage yoga mats, I would think about it.
They probably do. They got everything at Bass Pro Shop.
They probably
you
do.
You really got to get in there and see this
tons
place.
Of those.
They got everything. All right. That's our people's court. We'll be back later in the week. State of the Big Ten. Please subscribe. Rate us nicely at 5 stars. Unlike the Big 12, we get a lot of them. And share us on social media. We'll talk to you later this week.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Clydman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.